So I know what you're thinking. Surely an eDRMS is no place for archives. And you're not just thinking it because it's up on the screen there. And we struggled with this. Trim, which is the system we use, really sucks at managing archives, which is kind of ironic given archives are records too. But I was having a discussion with David Horn, who at the time was, I think, St Vincent's Hospital, and Bill Oates, who's from University of New England. And they came up with the brilliant idea of creating a record type in TRIM for each of the entities in the Australian series system for archives control. Once I had that, I was off. And just to give you, I guess, an idea that we weren't starting in totally from scratch, we did have our archives controlled through Tabularium before that. So part of this project was also migrating the data out of Tabularium into TRIM. And one of the things we did have to look out for there was there is a tendency for residual build-up of data in tables in Tabularium. So when you're doing that sort of migration, there's a few things to just to be aware of. You got that now? We can move on. This is the crux of how we manage the archives in TRIM. So this is actually quite an important slide. I know you can't read most of it, but essentially each of those boxes represents a record type in TRIM. And the whole represents, kind of, the Australian series system for archives control. There's a couple of elements missing. But down the left-hand side, we've got the contextual information. So we've got organisation, agency. We've added office / position and person. So we can register any of those entities in TRIM. We can record biographical details about individual people. We can record details about a particular position, so the Vice-Chancellor. And what this allows you to do when you're in the system is we're about to get a new Vice-Chancellor. It was just announced yesterday. So the first question somebody asked was, how many Vice-Chancellors have we had before? So we can just click on the Vice-Chancellor position, drill down and see all the people that were in that position. So it's quite a good tool for managing that context. Then on the right-hand side, we've got your standard archives control structure. So you've got the series. Within series, you have consignments. Within consignments, you have boxes, and then items, and then sub-items and photos. Some of the structure we have in the system is inherited. So we had a separate database for our photo collection at one point, and they had a different numbering system. And because the photos had been published and everything else, we decided we might as well just keep that numbering system. So normally you wouldn't have photographs separate from sub-items. They would just be the same. But it actually made sense to keep the photographs separate. And because TRIM allows you to alternately contain items within other items, you can actually build up a hierarchy of agencies, for example. So you only need one record type, but you could have five levels of agency reflected in the system. So even though that looks like a fairly linear progression from organisation, agency, and so on, it can actually be more than one level in each of those entities. Okay, so what are the benefits of benefits quant? We're doing the slides in slightly reverse order, I think. Okay, so the benefits of using an eDRMS for managing the archives collection, you have the full functionality of TRIM, in our case, available for the management of archives. And TRIM's a very powerful system, so it manages these large collections of records very, very well. There is also the advantage that you have no loss of metadata when you're transferring records from inactive to permanent archive. It's all in the one system. So you've got that transition in the one system of your records being active, semi-active, inactive, and then archives. We can use space management to keep track of where our archives are stored. So it basically acts as a warehouse management system. A highly customisable field structure. So We actually decided to split out some types of archival records separate from the rest of the collection because of their unique nature. So one of those examples is student records, which, yeah, we're a university, so we have a few. And what it allowed us to do, our student records go back to the 1890s. It allowed us to gather, as we were indexing those student records, gather additional information about the students. And we'll be able to see that when I show you the portal. But it was things like whether they served in the wars. They recorded an awful lot of different things on their student cards. So whether they served in the wars, you could record date of birth, date of death. They even, some of them have obituary notices on the cards. We recorded the town they came from, which we then linked through a spreadsheet to provide latitude and longitude. So that geospatial data is something we also utilise in our system. So, highly customisable. We have lookup sets in the system for our campuses, our buildings, a whole range of things. And all of that structure in TRIM we did ourselves. So there's no need to get any consultants in to do this. This is fairly bog-standard creation and management of record types within the system. That's the main point. It's cheap. That's the only thing you need to remember. So as I mentioned before, it's easy to drill down within the system. So you can drill down from a series to a consignment to the boxes to the items and then to the sub-items. Sub-items are the equivalent of an individual document. It's easy access to relationships between organisations and superior and subordinate agencies through the tree structure, and much greater item and sub-item control, including the capture and management of electronic documents. So we've so far catalogued, to give you an idea of the size of the collection so far, and we haven't fully catalogued the whole collection, we've so far catalogued about 65,000 items. Of those, about 20,000 are available electronically. So about a third of our collection that we've so far catalogued is available electronically. Not all of that's available through our portal, because some of it's still in the closure period. There are limitations and a few frustrations. You can't create a relationship between entities with an associated timeline. I think this is an issue in records management as much as it is for archives. Items and people or positions or agencies have a relationship for a defined period, and then they may not have a relationship outside of that. It'd be great if a records management system could capture that. And this is particularly true of what TRIM refers to as locations, but it's essentially as people, or in our case, you know, staff or students. Staff move around within an organisation, but the system doesn't have a way of keeping track of where they were at a particular time a record was created. So you don't get that contextual information. So we don't actually use the locations functionality in TRIM for managing archives for that reason, because we want greater control. Okay, so that's essentially setting it up in TRIM. At the end of my presentation, there'll be contact details. So if you're interested in setting up TRIM for managing archives, I'm certainly happy to share what we've learned. So what have we got in the collection? We have maps and plans, and we, I think last year, got ourselves a large format scanner, so we are actually starting to scan those as well. We have photos dating back to the 1890s, including magic lantern slides, which that's an example there. We have objects. So the university executive tell us we will not have a museum, but we do have objects in the archives collection. They're not museum objects. They're we have clothing, so dating back again to the 1890s. So you can see in the centre there is a sports honour cap. And I think that was the one that came to us via an op shop. Somebody died, their family took all their clothing to the op shop, and the op shop thought, hang on, this looks like it really doesn't belong, but, you know, being sold off for 50 cents. We'll see if the university is interested, and we were. Student works, so anything back to farm diaries when students were working on the Hawkesbury Agricultural College farm back in the around the turn of the century. Films, we've started a digitisation project for our film collection. So we've currently got, I think, almost 50 films up on our web portal, and we're adding to that pretty consistently. We also have a large video and audio recordings collection as well, and we're gradually making progress on those. But these sort of conversions to digital for film and for audio is generally a real-time conversion. In fact, you have the real-time conversion, and then you have your quality control checking. So by the time you actually go through the process, it's quite lengthy. And, of course, we have student records. Okay, so in terms of our history, we have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. We have 9 predecessors, which can make managing archival context a little bit challenging. The oldest is the Hawkesbury Agricultural College, which started in 1891. The next oldest after that was Westmead Teachers College, which was in 1969. And then we had a range of others between then and now. And now we're just the University of Western Sydney. We have started to digitally clean up some of our photographs, particularly where we need to use them for publication purposes. So this is, you know, cleaned up in Photoshop. But our scanning standards have a requirement that we capture a high-res TIFF version of the original object, so that's untouched. Then we have a high-res cleaned-up version, and then we have the version that you see on the web. Okay, so the web portal utilises the digital asset management for TRIM product that was developed by Alpha West. Its sort of functionality includes live search of the TRIM database. So it's not downloading from TRIM into a secondary database and then that's being accessed by the web. It is a direct access between the web portal and TRIM. It is a pictorial representation of search results. So that was deliberate, that we wanted people are visual. So they wanted to be able to scan, and it was largely designed for the sort of visual items we wanted to put up there, photos, films, and so on. But we can put documents up there as well, and we do. And it still generates thumbnails for those, and you can download those. We can publish collections of items, so that's kind of representing series structure sometimes. Although we've actually kind of avoided the whole series thing. We decided the public generally doesn't give two hoots about series system. They just want to go in there and search or browse. So we can do keyword searching and we can stream video and audio recordings. It has auto thumbnail generation, including for the films. So essentially we put a DVD in and there's a little conversion software and it generates the thumbnail, it's actually a GIF, so it's GIF, I learned the other day. A GIF that rotates between several images from the film. And then it generates an MP4 version and we capture the original digital version. We can map individual items using Google Maps. And we could auto link to requests or comments relating to an individual item. So if somebody finds something on our portal and they want to get a high-res copy, they can just click on a button and it'll generate an email to us. Each item that you view on the in the application has a unique URL. So if you found something and you said, hey, this is a great film, I want to send that to somebody, they can just copy the URL, paste it into an email and send it off. We can watermark for copyright protection if desired. We've actually gone down the path of the images we put up on the web are 75 DPI, which is fine for web viewing, but nobody's ever going to publish with it. We felt that was better than sort of, you know, destroying the look of the image by using watermarks. And we have loaded the Australian Pictorial Thesaurus into TRIM, and so that's what we're using for keywords to manage as well. Okay, let me skip through him. It is quite fun, though. This is a student card for Ernest Hughes, son of the Prime Minister, Billy Hughes, so during World War I. So this is an example of the sort of thing you generally don't find on a student card. If you've been reading it, you might get a feel for why you don't normally find this sort of thing on a student card. It's not often that the university or its predecessors would describe a student as having a decidedly evil aspect. And I think, you know, given they were in the middle of World War One at the time, to say they got rid of him when he joined the artillery was a little bit, maybe a little bit callous. But it actually reflects the significance of the college at the time. Was there was a number of prime minister's sons and other prominent people sending their sons to the college. I say sons, they didn't have female students until 1969, sorry. And just to give you a bit of a very quick snapshot of what it can do, you can see the tabs at the top there. You can do a word search, you can do a keyword search, or you can go into one of the published collections and just browse. So let's start off with a word search. Okay, so I'm searching for Henry Lawson. He wasn't a student, but his son was. Can't remember what his son's name was, but I can just put in Henry Lawson. And because we recorded in the notes that he was the son of Henry Lawson, this result comes up. I was thinking about it. We're using an internet dongle, so it's a little bit slower than if you actually have cable connection. I'm just asking if the front lights could dim. Let's jump to keyword search. So essentially, the keywords are applied to just the photos. And what it does is shows you how many results you get for every keyword that's been used in the collection. So for example, you can scroll down to, and you can see it's got this sort of, you know, keyword map here. So obviously, you know, horses features largely. And it just brings up the results in this sort of pictorial view. And you can just click on any of those images just to see what they look like close up. Or, okay, click on that button, in theory, and it will actually show you the full details. So it'll show you the notes field, the dates, and everything else. And you can just then... You've also got... I mean, it's designed to work with, you know, things like iPads and that sort of thing. So you can, you know, slide the date bar. So, for example, there I've scrolled between 1897 and 1931. So I just limited the results just a little bit. And then you can see the results for that. And then published collections allows you... It's kind of like having a mini exhibition. So for each of the collections you have here... So you have a bit of a description of what you'll find in this collection. The way they've designed it is when you click on each collection, you then have to click on a button to say enter this collection. And it just saves your data download limits if you're working on a mobile device. So that's the reason behind a lot of the structure in this. So if I go to film footage, you can see it's scrolling through the thumbnail. So that's your GIF has been generated for that particular film. Then just click on enter this collection and there's our films. So we've got, let me just remind myself, 47 films loaded so far. Our oldest is from 1927. This is what you'll get in the films. I mean, this is a silent film, it's 1927. But you can just drag and you can see it immediately jumps, so there's not that lag that you often get in streaming of MP4. So you just click and drag to anywhere and it will bring the film to that point. And then we have small collections like the student cards for returned soldiers from World War One. So in this collection, it's a nice, tightly confined group of cards. So when students... it was part of the soldier settlement scheme at the end of World War One, or towards the end of World War One. And students were retrained at Hawkesbury Agricultural College. So we decided that was a fairly nice, succinct series we could load up onto the web. So you can see there, it's all just alphabetical. So let me scroll down to the Smiths. Okay, so this is what you get when you look at the detail in relation to a particular item. So you'll have the record number, excuse me, title, start date, end date, including the qualifiers. For us, we'll have the campus, what sort of format they are, and a range of other information, including the notes. Then you can also go down here to Google Maps. If you click on that, it will actually, hopefully, bring up a map showing where this student came from. It's only by town. We haven't actually put in actual street addresses. So one of the things we'd like to change is to be able to bring the Google map up at about a state level resolution. Now, it's actually surprising how many of the students came from in and around the Sydney area. You'd expect a lot of them would have been farmers, but they weren't. Bit of a snapshot of the application. Up until today, works very slick. Okay, so some of the lessons learned. We started cataloguing our archives collection in Trim 6-7 years ago. And we had it in our minds at that point that we were going to make the collection available through some sort of online portal. So this was our end goal from the very start. As a result, we've tried to make our registrations of our items and sub-items reflect the fact that this is going to be facing the public and is actually facing the public potentially internationally. So place names that we'd be familiar with or terms that we're going to be familiar with in Australia or in New South Wales, we may need to explain in a little bit more detail if people from overseas are going to be looking at this. And certainly some of the acronyms that are used, even just NSW, isn't going to mean anything necessarily to somebody in, say, America. In terms of the security, we've probably gone a bit overboard. In Trim, we had to build in a few extra fields for this portal to work, and one of them was, do you want to publish this item to the web? We also set up a security level that's lower than everything else in the system. Because we had to set up, in a sense, a public user for Trim to access this stuff through the portal. So there is just no way they can see anything, because everything else in the system is a higher security level than they are, or the public. We also used a couple of other fields just to make sure that people wouldn't be able to access records accidentally. And we actually define which record types can be published to the web. So they're only ever going to be able to access archive items anyway. And in terms of privacy, Warwick will be pleased to tell you, we have access directions for our records. And it's actually quite simple for something like the student cards to do a search, find our closure period for student records is 70 years, we find the records that go up to 1942, in this case, and we release those to the web. So it's actually pretty quick and easy. Once you've set all this up. We do have a range of scanning standards, and they vary depending on the nature of the originals we're scanning. So, for example, your average size photo will generally scan at 600 dpi. Things like the magic lantern slides are a much smaller format to start with, so we do those at 1200 dpi. So it does just vary just a little bit. The end result is generally about the same size, though. We've got a whole range of internal procedures about loading different types of records into Trim for archives. And we've developed a range of spreadsheets for importing item lists. And that allows for autocomplete details such as that geospatial data. So essentially, once you put the town and the state in, it will generate the postcode and the latitude and the longitude automatically in those spreadsheets. And the lookup sets and everything else. So you're trying to get consistency every step along the way. Okay, I suspect I'm probably a little bit over time.
Please join me in thanking Michael.